Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we never take calls, nor do we tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We're so glad to have you back here, and we're glad to be back. Should I start out with a correction from last week? Or I think I'll start with an update on the Bird Whisperer. The Bird Whisperer, as a matter of fact, has nursed the sick chicken back to health. That's right, one sick chicken. If there's one sick chicken, the Bird Whisperer stops and focuses on that chicken. So after a visit to the local vet, and you had to know the vet was a little surprised to see a chicken. I don't think a lot of people in these parts bring a sick chicken to the vet. But the Bird Whisperer did just that, brought Blossom, I believe is the bird's name, the bird in question, had a limp going on. Anyway, after receiving what appears to be a half a dozen prescription medications and detailed instructions on how to administer the medications, the bird is back. There's like four boxes and two bottles, and packets of powders. Oh, we received prescriptions for the rabbit as well. We only have 5,000 rabbits. Anyways, the prescription medications seem to be doing their job. And little Blossom is back up and running, still limping a little bit. And now we've got another bird that's somewhat lethargic. The Bird Whisperer says it could be some variety of pox. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Something pox. Mm-hmm. You never want to hear that. Pox.
Well, she's doing better.
She's getting better, so she's busy taking care. So the other day, now the Bird Whisperer is an expert on all things avian. And the other day, as we're driving into the driveway here at the McBurney compound, a bird fluttered up out of the grass there on the prairie, up into the sky. And I looked and I saw the yellow breast and I said, meadowlark. And she said, yes, you're right, but what kind? I was like, what do you mean, what kind? I said, meadowlark. She said, but is it an eastern or a western? And then she knew another one. I didn't know there was three different kinds. I was kind of proud of myself for just nailing the meadowlark part. But she pointed out that it was, in fact, a western meadowlark. Yeah, I believe. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. But it was a meadowlark, so there you have that. All right. Okay, so a little housekeeping, a correction from last week. And I can't remember if I said it here or if I said it on Bob Inyart's show when I was guest hosting. But I called Catholicism the stupidest form of Christianity. And I think that was an overstatement. I'm a bit upset with the Catholic Church right now for a variety of reasons. And you'll get to hear a little bit more about that. But I think there are many, many stupider forms of Christianity. So I apologize for the overstatement, as I was a bit irate at the moment. What I meant to say was that the Catholic Church, and the leadership in particular, is the most bloated with corruption and superstition and bad theology. And then, of course, there's the homosexuality and the pedophilia. I'm not going to back off on that. And we'll get to an update on, well, I hate to even bring it up, but... We do have something on that now. President Donald Trump was over at the G20 this past week, along with other leaders, world leaders, and he refused to wear the G20 pin. So in an effort to give Donald Trump credit where credit is due, he didn't wear the G20 pin. He wore the American flag pin, while all the other leaders were wearing this same stupid, like a logo at a trade show or something. I mean, what is this all about? I think these big trade meetings are where governing officials get together and dole out government cheese to their relatives. That's and their political supporters and donors and patrons of all sorts. That's what I think they are. And well, I'm sure Trump was wheeling and dealing, but he didn't wear the G20 pin, and we want to give credit where credit is due. We appreciate the fact that Mr. Trump instead chose the American flag pin, which typically I find just I've dubbed it the Hannity pin. It's the Hannity pin. It's the I didn't serve, but I still worship America. I didn't have the guts to actually go into the military, but I bow and scrape every time someone in the military. And I got my American lapel pin, American flag right here. You're a great American. No, Sean, you're a great American. I think you might be the greatest American. All right, so congratulations to Donald Trump for not wearing the ribbon. We all appreciate that. All right. Let's get to the big news of the week. We have a report from Norway. About 300 cyclists. Cyclists, I said. Yes, cyclist season is back here in our neck of the woods. And as I've said in the past, riding on a two-lane road with no shoulder and blind hills may not be illegal, but it's not wise. Well, in Norway, they had about 300 cyclists took part in a Norwegian bike race at the end of June. And at least 50 came down ill after the event. Couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. They came down ill. They were vomiting, shaking, diarrhea, fever, stomach pain, all of that. Well, scientists say that most likely these cyclists were struck by an infection related to a bacteria which is present in the intestines of many animals. And he theorizes that it was sheep droppings that had decomposed during heavy rain and splattered up on the cyclists off the road. It was, he said, projected on the biker's route. And it must have sprayed into their water bottles, on their faces, on their hands as they rode by on their cycles. And he says that if the feces are fresh, and in large enough quantities, they can splatter on water bottles in such a way that the cyclists ingest sheep feces while they're riding. So there you have that. If you're out cycling,
maybe I'll get sheep.
Yeah, we're looking into different varieties of livestock. We could run some sheep right up there by the edge of the road. Just in case. All right. We love all of you cyclists out there, by the way. We encourage you to ride your bikes elsewhere as much as possible. We're all for it, just elsewhere. Now, let's get an update on some serious news, because there is serious news. The murder of the innocent by the socialist healthcare system in England was dragged out into the light by Charlie Gard's desperate parents last week. Now, the murder of the innocent by a socialist healthcare system is something that happens every single day. But this one was dragged out of the shadows into the light because the parents didn't want to participate. That was the wild card here. Typically, the socialist engineers of socialized medicine managed to cajole and they conspire and they motivate and influence the parents and the family to actually participate in the killing of the innocent. But in this case, the parents were not coerced by the powers that be. And I have an update. Charlie Gard's parents say that the fight is not over. The Great Ormond Street Hospital is actually going to return to the High Court on Monday for a new hearing, quote, in light of claims of new evidence relating to potential treatment for his condition. Which, that's just not true. Because they had that when they sentenced Charlie Gard to be murdered at the hands of the state. They already had information. The parents had already raised the money. They were ready to take the child for experimental treatment. But what happened is now that they've got all this attention. And that's uncomfortable for the murderous engineers of socialized medicine. And now that it's out in the light, they want to act like they're decent, civilized people and that they didn't really want to murder an 11-month-old baby. That's quite embarrassing to be caught in that situation. And so they're going to go back to court and see if they can find a way not to murder the child, which we're encouraged that they will not at this point, now that everybody's watching. The murder of the innocent is typically something that is carried out in secret and in the shadows. And when it's dragged out into the public like this, well, the light of day is a good thing in that case. Under the high court ruling, the hospital is forbidden from allowing Charlie to be transferred, and they've ordered so-called life support to be removed. Now, we've got a couple legislators here in America who have apparently offered some actual help. Representatives Brad Wenstrup of Ohio and Trent Franks of Arizona will be bringing a bill to the floor this week, making Charlie Gard a lawful permanent resident of the U.S. in order for him to receive treatments that could save his life. So when Congress comes back, the first order of business for these two will be to introduce that bill. Westrup and Franks made a statement, which they probably shouldn't have done. They probably should have just shut their mouths after announcing that they were going to introduce a bill to make Charlie a permanent resident here in the U.S. They should have just stopped. They said in their statement, should this little boy be ordered to die because a third party, overriding the wishes of his parents, believes it can determine that death is what's best for him? That's the statement from Wenstrup and Franks. And it implies that if the parents had agreed that maybe this would be okay. What's the deal with overriding the wishes of his parents? Are you saying that his parents could have been in the right? Had they, like I say, they should have just stopped with the announcement of the bill. But they go on. They say every human life has dignity, including the lives of those who cannot speak up for themselves. When the government is able to overrule a parent or guardian in determining a patient's best interest, every vulnerable patient is put at risk. I would call attention to the congressmen. I would call their attention to the fact that those among us who cannot speak up for themselves are being murdered every day in their district. Under the auspices of legality. And so it's a bit hypocritical for governing officials to even address an issue like this without just being ashamed of themselves. Well, we've got New York Presbyterian Hospital says it would be willing to admit Charlie. And they're seeking emergency approval from the FDA for an experimental treatment. The hospital there in New York also said it could ship an experimental drug to London at the hospital where Charlie is, along with instructions on how to administer the medication as long as the FDA approves. And so there are people trying to help Charlie Gard, giving us some hope that civilization has not spun into utter outer darkness. The London Hospital, Great Ormond Street Hospital, has declined assistance from the Vatican Hospital, citing the UK courts and the European Court of Human Rights, both of which ruled that killing Charlie was in his best interest, ironically enough. Anyway, now we would all like to think that Charlie could be cured, and I hold out some hope that he could be. But at this point, I think it's more about not killing Charlie than curing Charlie. Because as a society, for England, as governing officials, the act of murdering an innocent person, the act of murdering an innocent person is what needs to be avoided here. It's not so much about curing him as it is about not murdering him. And hopefully Charlie Gard will not be murdered. I really hope so. Now, let's compare Charlie to the situation in North Korea. Which situation do you think figures more in the economy of the living God? The impending war with North Korea, in which 100,000 people could die in a matter of hours, some of whom are innocent. Some of those 100,000 who could die in the impending war with North Korea, some of them are innocent. In Charlie Gard's case, one innocent person could be murdered by the state. One innocent person, whom everyone knows is innocent, could be murdered publicly by the state. I think the case of one innocent person is as important, if not more important, to our civilization than the North Korean situation. Because we all know Charlie is innocent, all of us. It's undeniable. And for a state to murder the innocent is far more deleterious to the functioning of a decent civilization than a just war. And you are one with the cause. We're back. It's the Weekly Worldview, and we continue with the news of the day. Our prayers go out for Charlie and his family and for all of the governing officials involved. We pray that they would do right and that Charlie might be spared and that we all might be spared from being complicit in the legal murder of an innocent person, which I think we all bear some responsibility if we allow this type of thing to happen. That's all. Now, let's get to the transgendered fish. Fish, I said, yes. Apparently, a fifth of male fish are now transgendered because of chemicals from the contraceptive pill being flushed down household drains. This is according to a new study of male river fish in the United Kingdom, whose science say are now displaying feminized traits. Some of them are even producing eggs. Male fish, I said. They have reduced sperm quality. They display less aggressive and competitive behavior, which makes them less likely to breed successfully. An analysis of the waters in the rivers indicate that drugs such as contraceptives and antidepressants are altering fish's natural behavior. Imagine that. Well, forget the fish. What is this doing to the humans, for crying out loud? I mean, the fish are just coming into contact in an ancillary fashion. A third of the population of the Western world are downing these pills every day on purpose. What's going on with them? Are we expected to believe everything is okay with them? Anyway. I'm not that worried about the fish, but this is a sign. If it's so bad that it's whacking out the fish, for crying out loud, how are you prescribing this to your 17-year-old daughter? You people, it's unbelievable. All right. Now, speaking of unbelievable, listen to this. This is from the Sun in the United Kingdom. A parent who identifies herself as a non-binary trans person is demanding their baby's birth certificate be the world's first to be marked gender unknown. So I want to point something out. The urinalists reporting here for the Sun who wrote this article, they are obliging the mental illness of this so-called non-binary trans person. I saw the picture. It's a girl, for crying out loud. A woman, if you want to be more politically correct. She's a woman. I mean, she had a child. But the urinalists at the Sun oblige her mental illness by using the pronoun there. She prefers to be called they for whatever reason. It all. Whenever I hear that these trannies want to be referred to by a pronoun that by definition is associated with more than one person, I always think of that demon legion in the Bible. It's like, we are legion. There's like thousands of them. And it brings to mind schizophrenia, multiple personality disorder, everything we used to associate with crazy people. The transgender movement being the new home of the mentally deranged. And it's the publicly acceptable way of being mentally deranged is to be transgendered. Well, this woman is a Canadian named Corey Doty. She has a mustache, okay? And she claims to be neither male nor female. And she's been fighting to keep her child's gender off government records since giving birth to the child last November, cluing all of us into the fact that she's probably female, even though she's prefers to be called they. Mom, who prefers to be referred to as they rather than he or she, told the Canadian Broadcasting System that her baby, whose name is Cyril Attlee, S-E-A-R-Y-L, Cyril Attlee, she says she's raising Cyril in such a way that until they have a sense of self and command of vocabulary to tell me who they are. Okay. She's calling her baby they, for crying out loud. Okay, she should be arrested. The baby should be taken and given to her parents if they're still alive. So, I mean, well, maybe not her parents. They didn't do a knockdown, drag out job. We'll take the baby. There you go. How about that? We'll offer our help right now. She can come to the McBurney compound. I actually don't know if the baby is a boy or a girl. Cyril? I'm just not familiar with that name.
Well, we'll decide.
We'll decide. Mom says, quote, I'm recognizing them as a baby and trying to give them all the love and support. Oh, no, she's not English, is she? She's Canadian.
Okay.
Rewind that. Mom said, quote, I'm recognizing them as a baby and trying to give them all the love and support to be the most whole person they can be outside of the restrictions that come with the boy box and the girl box. No check boxes, eh? That's mom, who should be arrested immediately. The Canadian province, where is she? British Columbia, has sent the baby health cards with an undetermined gender. So the state is entertaining this woman's mental illness as well, helping her to further deteriorate into dementia by going along with this, an undetermined gender on the baby's health cards. Because up in Canada, you see, you got your health card, so you get your free health care. And, Doty mom says, quote, when I was born, doctors looked at my genitals and made assumptions about who I would be. And those assignments followed me and followed my identification throughout my life. And these assumptions were incorrect, eh? Really, they were. How is it that you gave birth to that baby if they were wrong? she says she's been making a lot of adjustments since she was condemned to femininity. What's wrong with being a woman? Does she have a problem with that? What, is she a sexist? Anyway, I think women are fantastic. Fabulous, as a matter of fact. None more fantastic and fabulous, by the way, than my extremely attractive audio engineer, who is every bit a woman. A female. That's right. I hate to put you in that box, but there you have it. All right. Now, let's get to news from the Catholic Church. And I'm not sure how to discuss this story without making my extremely attractive audio engineer physically ill. But I'm going to try. Now, you people might think that it's insensitive for myself and Bob Enyart, my mentor on talk radio, that when it comes to a plural pronoun for a group of homosexuals, we tend to use the word pile. You know, like you have a herd of cattle, a flock of sheep, and a pile of homos. And you may think it's insensitive, but wait, before you judge us, listen to this. Vatican police have broken up a pile of homos. I want to say that just so that it's not so disgusting. They've broken up a pile of homos who were actually in a pile at the home of the secretary to one of Pope Francis's advisors. The apartment belonged to the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which is in charge of tackling sexual abuse amongst the clergy. That's the guy who owned the apartment was in charge of cracking down on all the sexual immorality in the Catholic Church. Police were called by neighbors who were complaining about irregular behavior of people coming and going at the apartment. The apartment, which is just a short distance from the Vatican itself. Let's see. The occupant of the apartment is the secretary to the Cardinal Francesco Cocciopalmerio, a key aide to the 80-year-old Pope Francis, communist Pope Francis. Cocciopalmerio heads the Pontifical Council for Legislative Texts and was said to have once recommended his secretary, who owned the apartment where they found the pile of homos, actively in a pile. I mean, they had to pull them off each other, for crying out loud. It was drugs, and it's just, I mean, it's like something out of a bar in San Francisco, for crying out loud. Right there at the Vatican. So the guy who owns the apartment was once recommended to be elevated to bishop, and well, that didn't happen. And now they have to untwine him from a big pile of, well, I don't know if he was there. But there was, it was quite a scene, man, let me tell you. This is the latest scandal, according to the Mirror in London, to hit the Vatican. It comes after its finance chief was charged with various sexual offenses. And, they have a litany of, I mean, do I even have to review? I mean, we all know what's been going on with the Catholic Church. So that's why we use the term pile, is because of stories like this. It's just not that unusual to find them in a pile. And so if you're trying to make a point about their lifestyle and what they actually are and what they do, I mean, if you want to obfuscate, you call them gay. If you want to obfuscate what they actually are all about. But if you want to be accurate in your description of what they are and what they practice and why they're so disgusting, then you use the proper, is it a pronoun? Is that what I'm thinking of? Is a herd a pronoun? I can't remember. Anyway, you use the proper term, and the proper term is pile.
I'll be out all night and don't you try to save me, 'cause I'll be out.
the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and to avoid becoming physically ill, my extremely attractive audio engineer went to one of the most flagrantly heterosexual outfits in the history of such things, and there you have it. All right. We continue with news from the Catholics. This is from our Synagogue of Satan file, which is mostly populated with stories about the Catholic Church. I'm upset with the Catholic Church right now for personal reasons that I don't want to get into here on the air. But I'm extremely annoyed that the Catholic Church exists and it exerts pressure, financial pressure on people to join the church for financial reasons, not really spiritual reasons. And that really bothers me, and I'm upset. I read the headline from the Charlotte Observer, which said, "Let married men become priests." And I thought, well, here, look at this. Here's someone sensible in the Catholic Church who's saying, "Let married men become priests." And this is a story about 75-year-old Monsignor John McSweeney, who is a Monsignor there at a parish in Charlotte, which would be North Carolina, I do believe. Charlotte there in the Carolinas, the northern part. So I start reading the article. The Monsignor has strong opinions about what needs to change in the church. He says he would support the church reopening the door to married priests. And I'm thinking, well, that's... He says they should make celibacy an option, just like it was in the first 1,000 years of Roman Catholicism. And I thought, well, this guy's making sense. But I should have stopped reading at that point because, well, he's a Catholic. And chances are, well, I'll just tell you what Elsie says. He says he'd like the church and the diocese to be more about hospitality and less about judgment. And now I'm thinking, uh-oh, here it comes. He says that means being more welcoming of divorced and remarried Catholics and LGBTQ persons and others.
You're unbelievable.
Oh. This really is. This is.
You're so unbelievable.
This is the one Monsignor in the Catholic Church that you think is maybe thinking clearly and trying to make some sense, saying, let's let the priests get married, maybe have children. They could probably relate to other people. But he's for all kinds of relating to all kinds of people. He says, I'm sorry. The Charlotte Observer reports that McSweeney participates regularly in celebrating an annual mass for a pile of gay and lesbian Catholics there in the parish. Yeah, they have an annual pile there, right in the church. And they have a mass with a lot of extra S's. A mass. Yeah.
Pile must be
an adjective? Pile would be the proper adjective to describe, let's see, a herd of cattle. I don't know.
I don't
think it's an. It might be an adjective. Help us out on that if you'd like to. But we'll get with our children afterwards, and they'll explain what's grammatically correct. No, we'll talk to them about a herd of cattle. What is herd? And they'll lock us on. Yeah. Also, at Denver Bible Church this morning. By the way, you should all come out to Denver Bible Church and visit. But I got there late. Now, normally I teach the children's church, but I got there a little late, and so church was already, they were rolling. And our pastor announced the title of the sermon last week was Out of Babel. And Pastor Enyard talked about the fact that recent DNA studies conclusively prove that the Egyptians were from the Middle East and not from Africa. So it wasn't out of Africa, it's out of Babel. And a fantastic sermon last week, by the way. Outstanding. You hear stuff at Denver Bible Church that you'll just never hear anywhere else. So Pastor this morning says, last week it was Out of Babel. This week, the title of the sermon is Surrounded by Sodom. Yeah, and so I'm sitting there with my three daughters, and I guy, I grabbed the two little ones and I said, let's go continue our Bible study outside. Because they really love it, by the way.
What?
They loved coming to the Bible study with Daddy at church. Oh, they love it.
I thought maybe Sodom and Gomorrah.
No, no, they didn't want to hear about Sodom. They didn't even know what Sodom is. And frankly, I will teach the children about Sodom, but I'm going to do that later. And so instead of surrounded by Sodom, which I'm sure it was an important and relevant sermon, because we are literally surrounded by Sodom, as you can see from the news I've read, the news I will read. But instead, me and the little kids, we went out and we studied the Roman centurion Cornelius and his meeting with the Apostle Peter. Just a little less, well, it made me a lot less uncomfortable than surrounded by Sodom. But I'll get the tape. Don't worry. I'll hear the sermon. And if you want to hear it, you can get the sermon from Denver Bible Church. Just go online to denverbiblechurch.com and buy a copy of this week's sermon. I think it's only like $100. And every sermon is worth at least $500 at Denver Bible Church. Sometimes $5,000 easily. But they sell them for, I think, $100, which is a bargain. But let's go now. So what did we just do here? Now, I got off was there a point that I was going to make? I don't think there was a point I was making there. Just kind of got off. Anyway, let's get, rein me back in here. I've got our, we just left the Catholic Church where they had a pile of homos and a priest insisting that, well, he holds mass for piles and various. So now we have breaking in from our moment of sanity file. Yeah, a moment of sanity here in the middle of the Weekly Worldview. According to CNN, an AirAsia flight to Malaysia from Perth, Australia, was forced to turn back. People on board said that, there was a technical issue with the engine. People on board says we were asleep. We heard a loud bang about an hour and 15 into the flight. And then the plane just started to shake violently. Now, can you imagine this? You're on a plane. You're an hour into the flight. You hear a loud bang. And then the plane starts shaking violently. And they had to turn the plane around. And it took almost 2 hours to get back to the airport. And the entire time, the plane was shaking and shuddering the whole time. There was a problem with the engine. The whole thing is shaking. Let's see here. Any imbalance inside a rapidly spinning jet engine can cause violent vibrations that are felt throughout the aircraft. And this Airbus A330... fortunately, it's a twin-engine plane. It was designed to fly on just one engine. But the plane is just shaking, and the passengers are quoted as saying it was really shaking. It was very, very scary. And one passenger says that the pilot came over the intercom on two different occasions and asked the passengers to pray to God. How about that? How about a moment of sanity in the midst of a seemingly insane situation? Maybe we're going to crash. Maybe the whole plane's going to burst into a ball of flames. So, yes, tuck. Yes, get into the crash position. But I want to remind you people, let's all pray to God right now. One passenger says, I thought I might die. And she put up a video clip on her Instagram or whatever. And the plane is just rattling violently. It's a terrifying situation. Anyway, I just want to give a salute to the pilot who offered his passengers a moment of sanity. In a moment when you think this could be the end, a smart thing to do is sit down in your seat, pull your seatbelt tight, raise your hands above your head, and pray to the living God. It's a moment of sanity in a situation that might seem insane. And we want to thank that pilot for helping everyone on that plane get closer to God. Because I can assure you, there were people praying to God before the pilot ever suggested it. But for him to come on the intercom and suggest that we should pray, well, number one, that lets you know the seriousness of the situation. But it also helps people to think about what they really should be thinking about. Not just when you're about to crash and burn or burst into flames, but hey, that's as good an opportunity as any, you know, to get people's attention. And we appreciate that Air Asia pilot's, well, his boldness and courage in the face. So he was probably scared. And a smart thing to do when you're scared is to pray to God if you're scared. And if you think you might die, pray to God. And by the way, let me remind you all out there, you are going to die. So pray to God. There you go. All right, now let's go to the politics file. We have a union story here. From the Battle Creek Inquirer in Battle Creek, Michigan, which is a union stronghold, the 400-member American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees has filed a grievance, I said, contending that the work of some goats, some work that goats are doing in a wooded lot, is taking away jobs from laid-off union workers. So what we have here, the grievance alleges that the university there in Michigan didn't notify the union that it was planning to use goats on their campus to clear a brushy, wooded, overgrown area. And the union workers and the leaders, I don't want to impugn the integrity of union workers, but I will impugn the leadership. The leadership is insisting that union workers would have been happy to take these jobs. But instead, the university decided to bring in some goats. A spokesman for the university says, "We've brought in a goat crew to clear undergrowth in a woodlot. Much of it is poison ivy and other vegetation that's problematic for human beings to remove."
The union can come in and clean the poop.
Well, that's right. The unions, they could come and clean up after the goats, but they're charging you like $30 an hour.
Wow.
You know, to clean up some goat poop, that's not a good deal. So anyway, the union workers, who there's no way, I've never met a union worker who would clear a field of poison ivy. I've never met any kind of worker who would want to do that kind of job. And the goats went in there no problem. They didn't complain either. They didn't demand, there were no lawsuits involved. They didn't demand a break every hour and 45 minutes. They didn't demand double time or any overtime. No one went out on sick leave. And the job was completed. And the university says that they didn't want to use chemicals. And they chose goats as a solution because they're environmentally friendly. That kind of makes sense, you know. The 20 goat crew is expected to clear about 15 acres before students return for the fall semester. And the goats are ahead of schedule, which never would have happened. Never would have happened if this was a union gig. I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. And that is greasy kid stuff from Stevie Vai. You'd have to be really in the know to get that one. Only my extremely attractive audio engineer could nail it like that. Thank you, Mr. Vai. We appreciate your participation. Now we go to the decline and fall file. It's the decline and fall of Western civilization. I know Donald Trump said in his speech in Poland that the West will never be broken. And I want to remind Mr. Trump that the West has been broken on several other occasions throughout history. The Greeks were broken. The Romans were broken. And what were they broken by? Rampant sexual immorality. Oh, they were prosperous. They had jobs. They had jobs. Yeah, they were prosperous. But they were broken by rampant sexual immorality. And so the West may be broken, is what Donald Trump should have said. And he should have warned us about the murder of the innocent and the rampant sexual immorality that threatens the foundations of our civilization. But instead, he said the West will never be broken and that we're all going to have great jobs and it's going to be fantastic. Huge, as a matter of fact. So all the so-called conservative radio hosts, they love that speech. I just have a hard time with governing officials being so hypocritical to bring up the fact that the main function of the government is to ensure prosperity for the citizens. That is not the main responsibility of the government. The main responsibility of the government is to ensure justice and the rule of law for the people. And they have been falling down on that for quite some time. And so don't talk to me about prosperity while there's innocent blood on your hands, because I don't want to hear it. We can't discuss prosperity until you clean the innocent blood off your hands, Mr. Trump et al. Everyone who had the pin, and even the ones who didn't wear the pin, and everyone from the President of the United States and Russia and Germany and the Prime Minister of England, all the way down to the local dog catcher in Norway, all of them have innocent blood on their hands. So don't get me going on prosperity, you hypocrites. Make me sick. Now, speaking of rampant sexual immorality from the Decline and Fall file, according to newstrust.org, Dateline London, this is a Reuters wire report, at least three people worldwide are now infected with a totally untreatable superbug strain of gonorrhea, which they have likely been spreading to other people because of the aforementioned rampant sexual immorality in our civilization. So this is interesting. This reminds me of another Bible verse where Jesus talks about, or maybe it was the Apostle Paul, under the influence of the Holy Spirit, talking about sexually immoral people receiving in their own bodies the penalty that is due. But now you've got gonorrhea that has morphed into this superbug that is resistant, so in some cases, to all forms of antibiotics. World Health Organization experts say that it was only a matter of time before last resort gonorrhea antibiotics would be of no use, and now we are there. The superbug gonorrhea is here. The director of the Global Antibiotic Research and Development Partnership says the situation is grim, and there is a pressing need for new medicines. Well, there is a pressing need for new medicines. Obviously, this needs to be taken care of. But there's a pressing need to teach people that rampant sexual immorality can make you sick and die. That would, but nowhere is it mentioned that people should stop with the, with what's going on. With the fornication, the homosexuality, and the piles of, the piles at the Vatican, you know, that you keep doing stuff like that, eventually you're going to get sick and die. That's what we need to teach the children, that sex was not designed to be treated like an amusement park ride, that it is it's a holy thing that's set apart by God for between one man and one woman for life. That's what we need to teach the kids, and that if you misuse this gift from God, that you could get sick and you could even die. Which is absolutely true. And for these three people, well, we'll keep up with this story because Matt Drudge, for some reason, is obsessed with gonorrhea. I can't imagine why. But he has regular updates, and so we'll get updates on that. Now, let's go from that to reason number 1093, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. From Charles County, Maryland, a former Charles County Public School instructional assistant and coach who told police he is HIV positive has been arrested for production of child pornography and 3 counts of second-degree assault against male high school students. He worked at Benjamin Stoddard Middle School, as a track coach at La Plata High School. He also worked at an elementary school in Waldorf and a high school. So he worked at several schools there in the Maryland area. And the whole time he is an HIV-positive child molester. Police believe he sexually abused several males on school property. As many as 10 middle school students were assaulted. 7 were identified in the videos that this pervert had in his possession. For some reason, he is still alive. Now, if you have the videos and you have him abusing children in the videos, how is it that you can't have a trial in one day?
1 hour.
1 hour. You put a judge, you let the judge watch the video. After the judge vomits, the judge orders that he be executed by the families of the children that he molested. Or at least they should have input on the method of execution. Now, that would help to ameliorate the continuance of this type of situation. If you would execute painfully anyone who does this, people who tend to do this would not do it as often. Trust me, that's true. All right. Detectives searched this government school teacher's home. The evidence included graphic images of the teacher assaulting underage. Just unbelievable. So reason number 1093... your child could be molested by an HIV-positive child molester. That's reason number 1093. And now this next story, I'm not sure I can even... this is from the Justice File. Clay County, Missouri, from KMBC. A Clay County, Missouri man has been charged with sodomy of a 1-year-old child that he was babysitting. He's been charged with taking advantage of a little girl that he was babysitting. On June 30th, the parents left the 1-year-old girl napping in the care of 26-year-old Jason Newland. Now, while they went to the store, after they arrived at the store, the mother realized she had forgot her WIC card, and so they went back home to get it, and they walked in on this pervert, and what they saw, I will link to it. I don't want to really mention it. The mother went back to the store and told the father. The father came home and started assaulting the pervert and probably would have killed him if a neighbor had not unfortunately stopped him from doing so. The father struck the man, punched him, and started beating him with a dresser drawer until a neighbor unfortunately stepped in and stopped the father from executing justice upon this pervert. The pervert was caught in the act, by the way. All right. Now, from that, I want to another moment of sanity, please. Help us. Right? So this is from our Real American Hero file. Officer Jody Thompson has received a certificate of commendation from the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation. This is a story from Breitbart. The story began in 2015... when Officer Thompson received a call about an incident of child abuse. He was off duty at the time, but he heard it on the radio, and he decided to respond. He went to the house. He arrived to find an emaciated, badly beaten 8-year-old boy in a trash can full of cold water. The officer wrote in his report that the child did not have a spot on his body that did not have a bruise or an abrasion. He says it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. So he took the child to state advocates who ended up taking the child to the hospital. He stayed by the little boy's, whose name is John. He stayed by John's side while the boy was in the intensive care unit. And from that moment, Officer Jody Thompson took steps to become a certified foster parent and took this actual little boy in. The actual little boy that he found, he actually took him into his home 7 months later, He got a call from the Department of Human Services asking if he would be interested in fostering a baby girl that young John's mother had given birth to while in jail. So the boy who was abused, his mother gives birth to a baby in jail, and they call this cop and say, hey, would you be a foster child to the little boy's sister? Well, Officer Jody Thompson and his family took the girl in without hesitation. She was one day old, and they brought her straight to their house. They picked her up at the hospital the day after she was born. Well, Officer Jody Thompson and his family have completed the adoption process They adopted both the little boy and the little girl who this police officer found abused. And now Officer Jody Thompson has received a certificate of commendation from the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation, as I reported earlier. But bigger than that, he has received two children who he literally saved from the clutches of death. And that is a hero. Officer Jody Thompson is an American hero. And we salute him today, and we thank him for restoring in us some hope for civilization. Some hope. There is indeed some hope, as long as there's people like Officer Jody Thompson walking the face of the earth who don't just... they don't just talk the talk. They don't just go to work and they see the crumbling of a civilization. But Officer Thompson actually stepped in to prevent the crumbling of the lives of these two children. And we salute him today. Thank you very much, Officer Thompson. Now, what do I want to... I'm almost out of time. I hear the women... I'm reading stories here. I don't know what to do here. Yeah, well, let's go to the Denver Library, since I live in Denver, or at least I visit there quite often.
Library?
You couldn't pay me to live there. I did live in Denver at one time, a couple times, actually. Anyway, the library in Denver has become an epicenter of drug use and rampant sexual immorality. The downtown library has seen a spike in drug use and illegal activity. Nobody's sure exactly why. But there's more homeless perverts. So they've added cameras, they've increased waste cleanup around the building, and they now stock overdose kits with Narcan so that they can save the junkies shooting up in the bathroom in the library. That's their solution. Let's give them Narcan. Undercover and uniformed officers are now stationed at the library. There have been 14 overdoses at the Denver Central Library since January. So the Narcan kits have already been used 9 times this year. The homeless people who call the library home, or at least they're regulars at the library, they say that drug use is still frequent in the bathrooms, and there's other things going on in there that, there's piles, let's just say. The library's solution to the problem? What is the liberal solution to a problem of rampant sexual immorality and drug abuse and overdoses in the bathroom? They decided to close two bathrooms on two floors in order to reduce access to the bathroom. That was their solution. And then they got the Narcan. The library is considering other approaches, including employing monitors outside the bathrooms. That's their solution. The solution to these type of problems is to teach your children that there is a God and that they are responsible to God and to their fellow human beings. And that's the solution. It's a long-term solution. As far as what do you do with the junkies in the bathroom? Well, I just don't think closing the bathroom is the appropriate solution. Maybe a good caning. A flogging, perhaps, if you're caught doing something like this in a bathroom. That might help. But anyway, so if you come to Denver, please visit the library. You'll have a delightful time, and you'll get a really good idea of what it's really like to live in that city. That's all I'll say. And that's it. We're out of time. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life. And of course you, and should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.